tuning in to the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. AfterBuzz TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Welcome to the AfterBuzz After Show. Bates Motel AfterBuzz After Show.
That's it. That's the one.
That's the one.
Yes.
Oh, I forgot. We forgot to call Joe Sanfilippo. I don't know if that's still possible.
Steven, can we call Joe?
Yes.
Okay. welcome to AfterBuzz After Show. I'm Joe Braswell. I'm joined, as always, by the lovely duo Casey.
Here I am. Hi, Joe. How are you?
I'm wonderful. I'm not joined by the wonderful, lovely Nando Velasquez, but I am possibly joined by Joe Sanfilippo. I think we may have his number somewhere. We'll see if we figure it out.
If not,
it's the Dua and Joe show.
As usual.
It's been the way it should be. I've been waiting years to get you alone in a room, Joe.
Here it is. It's all come down to this. and I'm very happy. The pit.
Dun, dun, dun.
Or the pool?
No, it was the pool with no plans.
23 feet deep or 28 feet deep?
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, we'll just put a diving board in there. It'll be fine.
Yeah, it's narrow, too, actually. That looked like a pool. Let me just start off asking you, what do you think that thing is?
It's where Bob Harris.
Hello?
Oh. Joe. Grandpa? Yeah.
What? On the phone, ladies and gentlemen, we have Joe Sanfilippo for once. How you doing, Joe?
Hello.
Hello. Are you okay? Can you hear me? No?
Hello?
Hello? Hello?
Hey, Joe, you're on AfterBuzz TV, man.
Good, that's where we should be.
All right. Joe Flippo, can you hear me? Joe Braswell? No? All right. What do you do? Can he hear you?
I can hear you.
All right. Well, let's go. We'll keep
Joe, moving. Can you hear Joe and Dua?
I cannot. I can only hear you.
All right.
Joe is in
Give
the...
Give me a minute to figure it out. Joe and Dua, you just continue on.
Thanks, right. Stephen. That's the lovely voice of Stephen Lemieux, by the way. Our beautiful producer / engineer.
Yeah, who also can sing, I just found out a little bit ago.
Yeah, he's awesome.
He's got voices.
All right, so back to the pit. So I want to start by asking the question, what in God's name is this pit?
Go. Something they'll remember, Bob Paris says, to Romero. So, I mean, obviously this is something...
Something who'll remember?
So when Romero walks into Bob Paris's office... And he was like, that is not a pool. And he's like, well, it's something they'll remember. In other words, you know, I think it's, you know, a ditch that he's planning on putting their bodies in.
23 feet deep?
Yeah. Isn't that what you thought?
No.
I
initially thought when I saw the construction, I thought it was they were breaking ground on the bypass.
Oh, that's better. That's definitely better.
I mean, what do I know?
Yeah.
But that's what I thought. I thought, oh, the bypass. That makes sense.
Oh, I thought he was digging their graves.
Oh. 23 feet deep.
You know, hey, nobody ever finds it.
Only a 6 feet deep grave, but like 23 feet is a lot of people. Or 28, whatever it is. Anyway, I wonder what that pit will be. I thought maybe it's the pillar for the first, you know... the bypass. That's what I was thinking, but I don't know.
Huh. I like that. Okay. I will go with that. Your answer is better than mine.
So let's go to your impressions. What did you think of this episode, Dua?
I like this episode. Mm-hmm. I like this episode.
Is there an episode that you don't like?
You know, not yet. There are episodes that I think are less exciting than others, but there hasn't been an episode really that I don't like because everything has a purpose and everything is, they don't just throw things in willy-nilly, you know, like everything really has an intention and it will come up later. And so that's what I like. And I think that that's something that Carlton Cuse is known for doing. He did it a lot in Lost. You know, you really have to pay attention. And what I liked in particular about this episode is it made so many references to season one. And I think the genius of a good show is a show that you can watch and then want to watch it again as you're continuing to watch it.
Sure.
So, and I think that that's what it did because after I watched this episode, I went back and I watched the pilot episode.
Mm-hmm.
which was great.
I love that you do your homework. I love it.
Yeah. I just enjoy watching this show. I like Vera Farmiga. I think it's really great. Uh-huh. And yeah, it was good. There are a couple things that really annoyed me, but we'll talk about that later.
Okay. I also enjoyed the episode. To answer my own question, I have not found an episode of this television show that I have not enjoyed. Mm-hmm. I really love every episode, and those of you who know me from The Following and Blacklist know that I'm not a shill for these shows. I've been very critical of some of these shows, mm-hmm. Specifically The Following and Blacklist. But this show I'm on, and I've loved everything I've seen. To your point about going back to further episodes, I mean, this whole serialized world that they've created, that we're invested in these characters, invested in the town, invested in sort of all these different people, that we can go back to seasons one and season two and have the entire bed be this mythology of the Psycho film and also the book, mm-hmm. as Carrie Aaron told us when we talked to her about, like, she's really, there's so many themes in the book that sort of resonate all into the series. It's just a masterful job, and I think it's a great show and a great episode. I like this episode a lot too. I like the idea of us getting to see Norman further slip into madness and also further still root for him. Again, we talk all the time about this magic trick they play on us by letting us root for Caleb, the child molesting, the rapist, incestuous rapist, I should say.
The rapey dunkle.
The rapey dunkle, thank you. And Norma, the, murderous, covering up mother.
Yeah.
Norman, the murderous, son.
When I was watching the pilot episode again, the first person that they kill is Keith Summers. Well, actually, the first person that they kill is Norman's dad.
Right.
But it made me think, a great trivia question, how many people have died on this show? From season one, and if anybody, has a number, has an answer, please share that with us online. But how many people have actually died on this show?
At the hands of Norman and Norma, or just...
At all.
Oh, there's a lot of deaths in the show.
A lot. Like, somebody dies every episode.
Yeah. A lot of dead people. Joe San, are you there? Can you hear us?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Hey, Joe. How
are you doing? What's up, Joe Braswell?
Hello. So what did you think of this episode, Joe?
I feel like we're in such good hands with this show. I feel like at this point with Norman, I'm driving through L.A., so I'm going to use the freeway analogy. But I feel like we're merging into the traffic. We've got the kid Norman that we've been watching for, the last couple of seasons, and we've all kind of been pulling for, but we're seeing him merge onto the freeway at this point. I feel like they're really carefully, masterfully merging the Norman Bates that we grew up with, the one we knew when we were kids, and the young kid that we all were kind of pulling for in the beginning, despite the fact that we knew where this was going.
Right.
So, and now to see it all kind of, the way they're doing it is so beautifully done. It's like this careful orchestration of all the cars lining up, and there he goes. Now he's nuts. It's very, 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 I feel very good about what they're doing. And I always get a kick out of watching brilliant TV because you feel like, and I think actually it was a Mad Men panel where John Flattery said something very similar. Good writing, you walk away from good writing feeling like, that's how it had to be. It couldn't have been any other way. It feels like that's just how it had to land. And that's what they do on this show. You never feel like anything was forced. It just feels like, that's how it had to go.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Merging onto the bypass, if you will.
Yeah. I'm going to take the off ramp off of this analogy and onto the streets of the after show conversation, the streets of this conversation. No. Let's get into the episode. So we have the morning after. We talked about the Last Supper, which is the last time we saw everyone together, and everything seemed to be very happy, and everyone's in a very happy place. And we see Norma wake up and just, stretching and just happy and content as could be, mm-hmm. and having a conversation with Dylan. And, it was also a continuation of that night. It was very sweet, and she's very sweet with him, and he says, I got to go out of town for a couple of days, but we still got to talk about Norman. And she's like, yeah, of course we do, and I know, and the kiss in the forehead, and,
And they go, but she was kind of giddy about Alex. She was like, it was nice that Alex came by, and she was almost like, she seemed like she had just gotten home from like her first date or something.
Yeah.
And she was all dreamy-eyed over Alex Romero.
I got to tell you, this is the first will they, won't they in years on television that I'm not like rolling my eyes and flipping the table over like, come on, do it already, you know. But I like the whole will they, won't they, you know, Norman and Romero. I mean, so Norma and Romero thing, not Norman and Norma. Will they, won't they?
we know that answer.
I don't know, do we? I don't know if we know that answer.
I thought it was a hard spoon last we checked.
Well, all right. but yeah, she's very giddy over Romero. And then I'll do that sort of transition into Romero, you know, going back to the car dealership and doing a really, really nice thing for Norma and getting the car back.
Can I just say, as a woman, that right there is something that, like, when you want to sweep a woman off of her feet, doing something like that, being observant and thoughtful and caring like that, that was the sweetest thing ever. That was a stellar move. Nice going, Romero. Yeah.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Here's my question. Now, I think to me that you know, if you look at the symbolism, right? So Norma went and bought the Ford, right? She didn't want. I don't know why I bought this, right? So, but it's more than a car. It was a whole reimagining of herself, right? She's running from the kids. I'm not this lady anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to do Norman's mom anymore. That's not who I am now. I'm going to go back and be Norma. I'm going to get crazy. I'm going to go to the bar and do the whole thing. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting to me that the mechanism that they used to bring her car back to her is the sheriff. We use Romero as the mechanism to return Norma completely to who she has been in the episode, in the show. Yeah. So we've gotten rid of the crappy clothes, we're back to the house, we're back to the same outfits, and now we've even brought the car back.
But and he's also, it's been fixed, right? Romero fixed the car. Because car is no longer damaged. I think that's very symbolic as well.
And I'm wondering if Romero fixed the car or if the used car dealership fixed the car, but the car came back brand new.
It's almost like a reinvention of herself in a way. And, you know, last week or 2 weeks ago when we were talking to Carrie Aaron about this, and I talked to her a lot about how the car in itself is almost like its own character and a representation of Norma, and I was sad that it was gone. And she said, the car is not, don't necessarily count your, you know.
Yeah.
And she teased to that, and it was, you know.
Well, she also said, you know, that she won't spoil it for us, but the car plays a very vital part.
Yes.
So we're seeing that now, which is great.
Right. And so basically we went to the source and we said, are we reading too much into the car? And we were told, no, the car is absolutely a symbol, and so we're good. We're on point. We're not putting things on this that don't belong there.
We're kind of smart.
Right.
Yeah.
So we'll see. All right. So that happens. So then that happens, and then there's also a very, very chilling conversation with Norman and Norman the next, also in the morning after.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Freddie Highmore does a nice piece of acting where Norma's asking him about stuff. He's actually talking about sort of saying, you know, to with his back to Norma, we see his face, but he's really struggling getting these words out, and he's sort of saying, like, you know, no, sometimes people, I'm not going to do my Freddie Highmore, but the look on his face and the anguish he was going through as he was saying these words was quite amazing. And they're interrupted by the noise of the swimming pool being built.
Yeah, well, and you've noticed, especially from the very beginning, that he's very, very different. He's very distant. Norma goes to touch him on the forehead and move his hair, and he gets really kind of antsy about it. And then, you know, they go to see the pit. But I love that he gets a glimpse of his mom's ass and a glimpse of his mom's boobs.
Yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah. Like I said, watching that by myself out loud, I was like, "Nice ass, mom."
Yeah,
like, which is really creepy.
Yeah,
he did get a little like.
Well, ever since the doctor said, "Do you want to sleep with your mother?" That's now all he's thinking about is sleeping with his mother, and now he doesn't know what to do with these feelings.
Yeah,
and you know so we were talking about this earlier, Joe Flippo, about what we think Bob was digging in the front yard of the Bates Motel. What do you think that is?
It's in the swimming pool.
It's a hell of a symbol, but I don't know beyond that.
So
you have a guess what he's digging? 23 feet, you have no guess.
I thought it was a grave for Norma and Norman, and then Joe thought that it was the bypass.
The bypass?
I thought they're starting. They're breaking ground on the bypass. Is what I'm thinking. It's not a swimming pool. It's a big hole. But that's what I thought initially.
So you think they're digging the? You think that could be a foundation for the bypass?
That's what I
bypass
thought.
Right through our hotel.
And hey, it's better than your guess, which is zilch. So.
All right. Okay. You know, that's a fair point.
All right. There it is. So to move on. So she finds out Bob Harris is doing this. She's very happy with it. But then we cut to do a hard cut to Bob, who's having a very reasonable conversation with Dr. McSensitive. Is it Finnegan? I think it's Dr. Finnegan.
Well, after this episode, he just wasn't the same doctor that I thought he was.
No, he really, he's definitely all of his dreaminess man. So his dreamy factor definitely went down.
Yeah, staple gun a man's foot, it takes the sexy right out of him.
Right. So he's having this conversation. And I got to say, Kevin Ram's done an excellent job at playing Bob Harris because he has this great balance between sort of super menacing and super charming.
Well,
which you want out of a villain, right?
Yes. And that's what
it's like a Bond villain.
That's what I wrote. After this episode, I found Bob Harris so charming and adorable, and I was like, I really, really like this character.
Yeah,
he must have so much fun playing this guy. This has got to be a fun role to play
for him.
And
he plays him in a way, like, I don't think that Bob has said anything directly threatening to anyone in the show.
No.
I think that every conversation he's had with Romero and everyone else, and Norma and everyone else has been seemingly hyper reasonable, like including when he had the conversation with the old doc. He sits next to him. He's like, Norma's guys need some information, and like the way he was so reasonable. Like this is like I need some information.
She has something of mine. I need it. Yeah.
And he's like, got his doc high horse. I tell you to go to hell.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, all right.
Why did he say that she was a patient of his? Like, why did he say that? That makes no sense because automatically, if you put yourself in that position and you're going to say she's my patient, automatically you know that now you have information that needs to be extracted from you.
Yeah, I don't know if he was thinking that. In that moment, I think that he thought he's shielded by that. Like he's like, these are reasonable guys. Listen, obviously he said it.
Yeah.
Like he's like, instead of saying like, I know nothing, let me go.
Mm-hmm.
He's saying, look, you seem like a reason. And this is part of the curse of Bob Harris. Cause he seems so goddamn reasonable.
Yeah.
He's like, hey man, I just want to chat with you. He's like, hey man, you know what? I'm a doctor. You know, I can't do that.
Yeah.
And Bob's like, I completely respect you. I totally respect you.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Nail gun, please.
Yeah.
What were you saying, Flippo?
Well, yeah, there's that moment, right, where you're like, these are the rules, and we all agreed that these are the rules, and this is how we live, and this is how we do it, and I got to just tell you how it is, and that's it. No one knows they're about to be in a torture movie until, you know what I mean, in real life. You don't really, you're like, this cannot be really happening. Oh, my God, he stapled my foot.
Right. Yeah,
but when you're tied up in a junkyard, you think that maybe the next step.
I don't know that you. I've never been in that position in the about to be tortured or soon tortured position. But I think there's a part of you that like he's like this is a reasonable world. Like these guys are just trying to scare me. I'm out here. They just want to talk to me. Like I'll tell them that I don't know anything and then leave me alone. What are they going to do? Like staple my foot with a nail gun?
Yeah.
And then they do. So anyway,
I got to tell you, not for anything. You would not have had to beat me in the face. That would not have been required.
No.
If you had put the nail in my foot, that's it. That's good. Let's talk. What do you need to know?
Yeah. It's easy. I tell you what, if you flash the nail gun on me, you hold the nail gun up, I'm spilling my guts.
Yeah.
That's it.
And I loved when he talked to Norma about that. And she's like, what did you tell him? He's like, I told them everything.
Yeah. He's like, leave me alone.
Yeah.
Get out of here.
Are you kidding? We're not sisters. We didn't serve together in Vietnam.
Right.
You're a crazy kid trying to choke me out in your basement. We screwed one night.
Right.
I had told him everything.
Right. So we got through that. So Bob actually relays this information to Romero.
Mm-hmm.
Again, he's got the super sensible, another sensible conversation. Like, look, Romero, like, we go way back. Like, come on. Norma's lying to you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the guy you can trust.
Mm-hmm.
I want you back on my team. And all that stuff. He's very much like, be reasonable. And it was a really heartbreaking situation. You can see the wheels turning in Sheriff Romero. Another great acting job by our friend Mr. Carbonell. Like, you can see the wheels turning like, I don't want to believe this, but it does make sense. And, I did let my guard down with this woman. And am I being played for a fool? And I do care about her.
See, I thought that he played that very mysterious. And it wasn't until Bob Paris said, I want you back on my team. I know your looks. He said, I know your looks.
Yeah.
And so I like that Bob Paris is, for Romero at least, is not shrouded in mystery through the eyes of Bob Paris.
Right.
So I like that. I liked that dynamic of that scene a lot.
Yeah.
But can we reverse it back just a moment? Because before that scene, there was the scene with Norma and Normero, or the whole Normero scene with the car.
Yeah, go ahead. Elaborate on that scene.
Well, it was just the sweetest scene, because you get a lot of tweets, you get a lot of talk about Normero. Are they going to get together? Are they not going to get together?
Will they or won't they?
Will they or won't they? I don't think they ever could, because
it's like me and Flippo.
Yeah. When's the wedding? And I think that we got the most of what we're going to get out of it. I think that the sweet scene where he got her car back, and that glimmer as she's running to her car to get the pink slip was like that he thought, what this might be something. And then, of course, cut back to the scene with Bob Paris and Romero in the office. And then, she's a liar, and he always knew her as a liar.
God, I sincerely hope not. But I fear that you're right, because I really believe the Last Supper, we all sort of feel like the Last Supper is the last time we're going to see these people happy. And if, what we know about this show is true, and if they do have a 5-season plan, we are smack dab in the middle of that turn. We're in the middle of season 3, which is the halfway point. So we've built all this up to this moment of the Last Supper, where everyone's happy together. And then we spend these next, 2.5 seasons ripping these people apart.
Yep.
And getting Norma up in that chair, which she was, we saw her in the window earlier in the episode, which we'll talk about.
Yep.
But I don't know. So I fear you're right, and that breaks my heart. Joe, what do you think? Do you think Romero and Norma have a chance here, or was that it?
I don't know. I feel like there's always an option, because if she does come clean with him at some later date, it might work out. But as far as the Last Supper aspect goes, as far as this is the last time we're going to see everybody happy, and it's all downhill from here, I completely agree. It's going to be down. It's not going to be a 90-degree angle. It's going to be like a 45 with a lot of bumps. But we are definitely going to land on the bottom.
Yeah,
I think you're 100% right about that, Drew.
Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, I think I said it, but it's okay.
Oh, I'm sorry, Brett.
It still was a sweet scene when you cut to that scene when he goes up to the door. She opens the door. She's like, "I'm making dinner. Come on inside." And he gets so nostalgic. He's like, "I remember our first conversation.
Yeah.
You were lying to me."
Oh, it was so sad. I was really, he's like, "I'm giving you one chance."
But in that moment, you have to think about it. In that moment, she was really choosing between her feelings for Romero and the love of her son.
Which is no competition.
Yeah.
No competition.
And she doesn't even know she's programmed. She didn't even know she was doing something wrong. She's been telling herself that lie for so long.
Exactly. And it was a heartbreaking scene, because you kind of that Norma's not going to break down and cave. Mm-hmm. But you want her to, for the sake of having the ally of Romero. Mm-hmm. Of Romero. But it's not going to happen. So watching that unfold, and then he gives you like last chance.
Yeah.
And she's like so dismissive. Nah, he fell. Yeah. Well, you know what happened to him. I told you already. Goodbye, Norma. that was heartbreaking.
Yeah, she's like, Alex.
Yeah, like, well, wait. So that's that.
And, not for anything. I think that's, if you want my opinion as far as the character goes,
sure.
I think that's, and actually, that's the harder choice. It's easier to have an ally. It's easier to be able to rely on somebody. It's easier to say, okay, here's what really happened. And put yourself in his hands. But she can't do that. She doesn't have that luxury, and she knows it. Mm-hmm. So at any point, that information could destroy her. So it's interesting to me to see that I don't think she had the option, really. I mean, we all wanted her to, because we all believe that Romero's going to be great if she does tell him. But she doesn't know that for sure. I think it's the tougher of the two options to say no.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
And did he call who did he call, the DA?
The DEA.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Hold on.
Drug enforcement.
But why?
Enforcement agency.
But why would he call the DEA on a murder that happened in another?
So not about the murder.
He has the flash drive.
He was calling the DEA. I thought that he was calling somebody about Norma.
No, he's holding the flash drive. And what are my choices now? I've been protecting Norma with this stupid flash drive. I have it. I'm not going to give this thing to Bob, as Bob wants.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to protect Norma anymore, because she's a liar.
He called the DEA.
What do I do? I'm calling the DEA,
he's
and
like
I'm
the super,
blowing the lid off this
whole
thing.
He's like a superhero.
Yeah, I mean, which is interesting. I mean, like, you know, what choices does he have? And he could be else, you know, saddle up to good old Bob and give him the thing, and they can be allies. And which is what I thought he was. That's the call I thought he was making. Which
really?
I think that's how the scene was supposed to be played out. I think the scene was supposed to be perceived like he's holding the flash drive, and then he makes the call, and you expect Bob to go, "I'm glad you called, Alex."
Yeah.
But it's really the DEA.
Like, so, he chose Norma between, like, between Norma and Bob.
Yeah. So that's, you know, that was very interesting. So let's backtrack. Let's talk a little bit about Norman, the star of the show. One of the stars of the show.
So Norman's single again.
Yeah. Like, I want to get to Emma in a second, too. Well, let me just touch on Emma for a second. Mm-hmm. Emma is a freaking rock star of a chick. Mm-hmm. What a great, she's amazing.
She is, as Nestor Carbonell said when he was here, she is the heart of the show. Yes. She's also the moral compass of the show. Yes. I have an end of series prediction that I will tell you guys about later.
There's a great end of series prediction or end of season prediction on Twitter as well, which referenced the movie Psycho, and I can't remember who did it, and I can look it up in a second, but it was awesome. I want to go back to, Emma, like, you know, the three wonderful things she did, just the way that she, first of all, went up and handled that conversation with Dylan. It was this very sweet conversation on the phone, which is like, you know, and that whole was well acted and very sweet. But then going up to sit and give the brownies and the handpicked flowers was adorable. The way she handled Gunner, who's like, hey, Emma, I was going to call you, but,
Didn't know if you'd be into it.
I mean, and she's like, you know, hey, buddy, it's fine. It was cool hanging out with you, but, you know, we're both busy. I'm focusing on myself, and completely lets him off the hook, but, like, without, like, letting him down. Mm-hmm. It's just expertly handled, you know, in the only way that women can do to goofy guys, like me and Gunner. And then back when she handled with Norman, that was expertly handled and sweet with Norman. Like, this is what it is, and I'm still here, and I'm your friend, and I love you, but, like, you know, you need to focus on that and focus on it. There's a part of me that thought she's going to push her right into the pit. That didn't happen, though. There's a part of me that I'm like, oh, no, she's going in the pit. Come on, Joe. There's a part of you that thought, like, Emma's going in the pit. Like, okay.
No question. I was like, walk away, lady, walk away.
Yeah, but and Freddie Highmore again with the almost hug and the way he plays that is like, okay, yeah, and like he wants to hug but he doesn't, and he's, I gotta go back to the house, and you know, you just, your heart breaks for old, you know, psychopathic murderer Norman Bates, but Emma is the truth, man. This chick is awesome, and I really hope good things happen to her, but I know they won't. So.
I just think that she handled every relationship gracefully, and I really thought after that conversation with Dylan and Emma that Dylan was going to die. That's what I thought was going to happen, because it was such a cute conversation.
It's not too late.
Immediately after that conversation, she talks to Norman, and you know, so she would rather break it off with Norman for something that she is or is not sure about what would happen with Dylan, but that's what kind of a stand-up chick she is.
Right.
Like, I'm not going to have a flirty conversation with your brother.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to break it off with you because obviously something is not right here.
Goddamn class act.
She is a class act.
Yeah, I love her. Okay, so that was great. So moving backwards to Norman. So, yeah, Norman's got some problems. Norman's really, really struggling after of this whole attraction thing, and is really sort of breaking down in and around it. And
he has a long blackout in the rocking chair. Did you?
Yeah.
Right after that. And now you talked a lot about what triggers Norman.
Yeah.
And it's almost like, you know, emotional trauma will trigger him, because as soon as Emma had that conversation with him, he runs upstairs. And he has a blackout in that rocking chair for who knows how long, but it goes from sunup to sundown. Yeah. You can tell by the time lapse.
And he's also in the rocking chair.
Mm-hmm.
He's in the famous Norma Bates skeleton rocking chair, and it's weird because I think that he's in that window, but it's not Norma's room; it was his room, right? So like he's just rocking back and forth in the window very ominously. But that was, you know, sort of foreshadowing of him sitting in that chair in Norma's window at some point. You know, I love the device they have now. It's very brilliant writing that we have the device of Norman's blackouts now when you see the old dog pop up to life.
Yep.
Woof, woof.
Yeah, like, Juno.
Juno. And he's never surprised. Juno, where are you going, boy? I'm like, come on, Norman. I don't know. Joe, do you have any thoughts on Emma and just really quickly and or the Norman blackouts?
That dog is so damn creepy.
It's just such a next level creep out every time that dog shows up.
Yeah, because you know he's in blackout land.
Yeah, he's not there. He's checked out, and whatever's going to happen next is not going to be any fun. And then, you know, as a viewer, I don't like the feeling, although it's always intriguing, of not knowing what's real and what's not. And right. So, like when we chase the dog down the highway, and we see Bradley show up, is she really there? You know?
Yeah, we'll get to that too. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Like that's something that that is the question. Like because he's in full blackout mode, so we want to know, is that really Bradley? And you finally got Bradley. Well, you know, as you've been teasing for, you know,
which it would
10
make
episodes.
It would make sense that she was just a manifestation of his, because they were, you know, Carlton Cuse, that was like the big reveal at Comic-Con when they were talking about what you can expect from season 3, and he's like, Bradley will be back. So, you know, if they were talking about, you know, what can we tease without really revealing everything, but kind of misleading and giving a sense of misdirection, I think that would be the way to go. So yeah. Only seeing her in a vision in Norman's mind might be it. That might have been it for Bradley's back for season 3.
Yeah, well, you know, we're going to see her. And we're going to see her the next episode for sure. Yeah. Because we need some resolution. But I don't know. We can talk about that in a second, whether she's real or not. But just back to Norman, you know, he has his blackouts. He's in the chair. He's doing his thing. We do see the Easter egg time, the owl, the owl that, mm-hmm. that he's working on. It is the actual owl that is in the lobby, famously in the lobby of Psycho, and, mm-hmm. and soon to be in the lobby of the Bates Motel. And you see him sort of like spreading the wings out as the owl spread out, which I thought was cool.
I feel like he never leaves that motel. Like, I don't think he's gone anywhere. The last place he went was to the store to get a phone with his mother.
Yeah, we can't remember. Yeah, we can't remember. We don't see Norman outside of the Bates Motel property that much at all. So that's also
very isolating.
Very interesting observation. But the important confrontation that he had, which is just beyond telling, is he breaks down and he has to tell his mother. He has to tell his mother that what he's feeling, because he has no one. This is, again, the heartbreaking thing about Freddie Highmore.
It was such a good scene.
Like I have no one else to talk to, and you're the only person I trust. So the only person I trust is you. So I've got to tell you that I want to have sex with you, mm-hmm. Mom.
Yeah.
Ew.
It was, no, that was a really, really, it was such a good scene. And I liked how he started, like, don't turn on the light.
Yes.
Keep the lights off. I'm just going to sit next to you because I'm so shame-filled.
Right. And so that scene takes place, and so he very, like, you know, he's full of shame, and he's full of, this is what he said, and this is what that doctor said, and this is what happened, and, you know, I can't remember the exact line, I don't know if you wrote it down, but it's like, I'm afraid to tell you mostly because I fear that it could be true.
Mm-hmm. You know? And that you won't like me anymore.
You won't like me anymore, like when I tell you this. Yep. It's almost like if she said, no, I'm glad you're sexually attracted to me, let's do it. He's mm-hmm. relieved. Or, no, it's normal, he's relieved. But, like, in that moment, like, you know, what's she gonna say? And, you know, Norma wastes no time. Like, not one beat. Like, oh, duh, honey. Like, it's normal. We're human beings. And I gotta tell you, like, on the scale of, you know, crazy Norma and everything else, like, that was a very excellent rationalization/explanation mm-hmm. she gave Norman of his feelings and human sexuality and the way human beings work. That was totally believable and plausible to me. Mm-hmm. The shots to Carrie Aaron and the writers and Vera Farmiga for pulling that scene off, because I was at the edge of my seat, like, what's she gonna say? And she like, oh, dude, it's normal. So what, you look at my boobs? Yeah. So what? Like, big deal. I'm your mom. We love each other. Like, you're a kid. Like, you know, you're developing sexually. It happens. Come here. Let's hug it out. Mm-hmm. Like, we're friends.
Well, and it's funny that it's like that. She really talked him off of a ledge, you know, and he thought that he was absolutely insane, and she talked him off of a ledge, and then immediately after that conversation, she embraces him in this really inappropriate hug that takes them both down on the bed, and so it's such a mixed message for him.
Yeah.
So,
like, and me. I was like, what are they? Are they going to do it? Like, what's happening? Like, Flippo, what did you make of that scene?
I said it for a long time. She boundaries. Like, she's got boundary problems. And they keep manifesting. You know what I mean? Like just straight up boundary issues. Like, and they keep manifesting horrible things. And it's funny. Like, I just think it's so carefully thought out, and it's so well thought out that is what you know, that, like, okay, what'll trigger this guy to be a nut? Let's figure it out. And it you know, mom is just, but she's that way with everybody. She's, yeah. I mean, clearly at that one point or another, she was that way with Caleb. she's that way with all the other men in her life. She's very touchy. She's too physically available, I think, right. In a lot of ways, especially with Norman. Good God.
Yeah.
It's so wrong.
Yeah, it's super wrong. I can't say enough about it. I have, but I'll continue to say more. I can't say enough about, like, you know, the tone and what they're able to do with this show and getting us so involved into these characters to the point where, like, you know, I was relieved that Norma was able to say that for Norma. I was relieved for Norman, you know, in that mm-hmm. moment. And the explanation was so, like, she had me. I'm like, yeah, dude, he's a kid. It's natural to want to have sex with your mom. What's the big deal? Mm-hmm. Like, she had me. And I was like, wait a minute, that's not right. But, you know, but, like, it was, you know, it was so well done. And then, that weird, awkward laugh of Norman, like, she cracked a joke, and Norman's like, he's so happy, and then they,
Oh, mother,
stop it. And they embrace on the bed, like, I don't know, it's extremely well done, and I don't know, I'm not saying
it was really, there was another really good scene with Norma and Norman as well, down in the basement, when Norma runs in, and when you talk about scenes that you want to, like, submit for, like, Emmy nominations, yeah. That scene with Norma, when she's explaining to her son that she has divulged the secret that he's killed his father.
Oh, my gosh.
And he's like, what? You told the doctor that? And then she does. And, of course, she says the iconic line, you know, you're going to kill me. You're killing me, which has a double meaning.
Yeah.
And it means, you know.
You're going to kill me, Norman.
Yep.
It's like, yes, he is.
Oh, and how you can scream like that and not overact. You know, it's a gift. It really is.
Yeah. And not to mention, this is just right in line with Norma's character of one moment she is, it's just a sort of bipolar, I'm going to call it bipolar, but this roller coaster ride of, like, I'm so sweet, I'm your best friend, and I'll never, ever do anything to hurt you, but you drive me crazy, and I'm going to get you, and I die, get out of my face, but I love you so much, mm-hmm. and I'm here for you, I'll never like it, but you're nuts, like that, you know, or, you know, the other extreme, which is the, I love you so much, but get over it. You just have to, like, be a man and leave me alone, mm-hmm. but I love you so much. Now, get out of here. Like, that thing that Norma does, that Vera does so well, was, that was it. Like, at that moment when she was really, really trying to, you know, come from a sweet place and say, Norman, honey, I have to tell you something. I kind of screwed up, and I don't want you to be mad. And the second he's mad at her, she's like, well, look, dude, you're a murderer, and you're going to kill me.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. And what did you think? What did you make of that scene, Joe Flippo?
She's brilliant. I've said it before. I think I might have said it to her. I think she might have backed away from me because I might have just said, you're awesome or amazing. I don't know.
I think you might have puked on her shoes. If I remember correctly, I said, I think you might have puked on her shoes when you met her. If I remember correctly,
I came very close.
You think Vera's brilliant,
so brilliant, and to be able to pull and make everything feel organic and make everything feel like it's supposed to be there. I mean, number one, obviously, it's a testament to the writing, but you can't. I can't think of anybody with the exception of Meryl Streep who is able to do what she's able to do. Her access to so many levels of different emotions at any given time. And it's funny because with a show like this, it's every week. And so you watch it and you start to feel like this is commonplace. And then you go and you watch a different show and you're like, oh, never mind. No, it's not. That's right.
Right.
This is an amazing, amazing performance.
It's a really, some real serious work's being done here. So that scene happens, and then this sends Norman off into, spinning out of control and running down the street into another blackout. What essentially happens is he has that moment where he's like, are you telling me this? Mm-hmm. Are you here?
Is that you?
Is this you?
And so then, it's almost like that lucid moment knowing that he does manifest her sometimes.
Yeah.
And he's like, this can't be real. I must be making this up.
And then she breaks out, and then in comes Mother Norma.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and a pretty sexed up Mother Norma, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
This Mother Norma's got the dress on. She's got, like, the things.
The same dress that he took.
Yeah, the periwinkle blue dress, as mentioned in Psycho as well, as a recent rewatching reminded me. Like, that she was buried in a periwinkle blue dress. I'm not sure if that was distressed periwinkle blue, but that was, it's a line from Psycho as well.
Interesting.
But anyway, yeah, she's in the dress off the shoulder. She's kind of sexed up. She's got some sexed up hair.
Mm-hmm.
And Norman looks like he wants to put down the other, you know, thing. And then this is when we first hear the thing, like, I will kill anyone. I'll protect you. Like, I'll kill people for you, basically, is what she's saying. And like you're, you know, it's all coming together. Then he runs out and runs downstairs and then looks back. And what gave me a real genuine chill to see Vera Farmiga, Norma Bates in that window. Like, that gave me a real chill, like, mm-hmm. looking in the window, like, Norman, like, you know, as well. That was some scary-ish right there for me. I don't know. That got me. And then he ran off down the highway, of course, and then ran into Bradley. But what did you think of that whole thing?
I think that was just a foreshadowing of just, you know, and I'll save it for predictions because I think that was pretty much allowing, you know, the Mother Norma manifestation to start killing people.
Right.
So. Yeah. You know,
like, who's, don't worry. Like,
who's the threat right now? You know, Norma left and she goes, "I'll take care of this. Don't leave the house."
Right.
And of course, the first thing he does is runs out the door.
Right. But then the mother Norma says, "Yeah, I'll take care of it. All right.
I will kill." And he goes running out of the house. And of course, you know, who's the ultimate threat? Who's the person that has this information? You know, it's Bob Paris.
Yeah. So who knows what Norma's going to do? It's hard because remember when Norma went up to the drug cartel, the drug dealer. And buzz the gate in season 2 and let me in. She's out there this reminds me of that. She's going to go straight to the Arcanum Club and like bang on the Bob Harris's door.
Probably.
Like, your swimming pool sucks.
Yeah.
I don't know. Stop threatening me.
Talk about the father-son gun running
let's get to the gun run. So I think we kind of predicted variations of this. We thought like, you know, Caleb's going to go on the gun run for Dylan. Someone's going to die on the gun run.
Also said that he was going to go and then Caleb would go with him.
Yeah. So we, in our various sort of like scattershot prediction, we hit something. We covered every base and we hit something. So obviously, you know, Chick, sets this thing up and Chick is just as great as ever with all of his lines, but,
mm-hmm. But apparently and a backstabbing modern, conniver.
Sure. There's that, but whatever. But like, you know, he's a great modern art piece that he has, and sells. So he loads the thing up with guns. He sends them off. Caleb goes with it, as you knew he would. Mm-hmm. We find out a little bit more about Caleb, kinda, mm-hmm. in the moment of, you know.
What his warrant is for.
Yes. And sort of like, you know, and Dylan's like, just honestly, did you kill him? Like we're on a gun run together, Dad. Like, spill the beans. Like, you know, there's no more hiding.
He's like, so, no, but I beat him up real bad.
Yeah, it's good. And then another cool move by Dylan with the, by Caleb and planting the gun. Like, knowing.
That let you know right there. First of all, if Caleb didn't go on this gun run, I'm pretty sure Dylan would be dead.
Right.
Second of all, he knew exactly where to put the gun. This is not his first rodeo.
No.
He was really, like, perfect. I'm going to hide the gun here. They're going to tell us to get on our knees. I'm going to grab it. I'm going to save the day.
Yep.
I'm going to save my son.
Yep.
Keep my family together. And then now I'm going to go back and kill Chick. Right. I mean, what do you think is in Chick's future now?
I mean, well, nothing good for Chick. But before we get to that, we have the whole, you'll stop at the phone booth and the tape phone and we get to the location and it's obviously a huge setup and these guys are pissed at Chick, mm-hmm. and they're going to send a message. They blaze it out and a blaze of glory and are on the road, presumably to kick with no money, by the way.
Yeah. I just say just one thing? And I never say anything negative, but there's this one thing. This scene really kind of annoyed me because I thought that the dialogue in there was just a little silly.
In what way?
Well, just like the henchmen, they were like, well, we were planning on killing Chick because we were mad at it. And, you know, there was just, I don't know. It just seemed like it wasn't as rich as dialogue normally is. It almost seemed like they needed to fill the space and explain.
It's tough to negotiate your way through that. It's tough to get like the writing lined up. So that we can actually have Caleb get the gun that he had planted, and so that we actually still have empathy for Caleb's character and for Dylan's character, so there's no ambiguity. You know, you have to actually have really what writing it on TV is you're maintaining the audience's relationship with the characters. So we still have to have empathy for Caleb and for Dylan. So in order for that to work out, we have to absolutely know 100% that these guys were going to kill Dylan. And so the dialogue has to be almost silly enough to have him be like, and I'm going to send the message, and the message is this, and the message is I'm going to kill you right now. What I'm going to do is kill you now. Right. And so,
exactly.
You know, but I agree. That was a little bizarre.
It was just uncharacteristic of the show because a lot, especially in talking about when they, you know, will edit and they'll edit out dialogue and really kind of play off of a look. And I could understand here how that would be difficult, but now to just have a lot of just, you know, it was just filler dialogue just so the audience was aware of what was going on, you know.
Yeah.
Let me be perfectly clear. I'm going to put this gun to your head, and I'm going to shoot you. I'm not going to shoot you. I'm only going to shoot you, and then you can take him back to the other guy. Here we go.
It's exposition. Yeah. You know, you need to happen.
Yeah.
But, you know,
everybody take a deep breath.
Hey, it was good to see the Bates brothers, father and son, Bates team.
They really hashed it out. Happen. It was great. I loved it. Yeah. I absolutely loved it.
And Dylan's a crack shot, and they got that shit did. They got it done. You know,
can I mention one thing that happened on that trip that I thought was the double meaning beautiful writing thing?
Yeah.
What?
When they were talking about Norman and Dylan said he hasn't gotten over the whole Norma thing, and then Caleb was like, "Yeah, no one gets over Norman gets over."
Oh, that was
over.
A beautiful line.
Yeah, it's a nice line. Okay, I want to. We're running out of time, so I want to jump into predictions. But I want to. I do in the predictions. I want to ask. No, we're good. We're good. We're good. Predictions. We can go there.
And now
it's like a drop stop.
I do want to get a prediction. I do want to say a couple of things. I want to ask the group here: is Bailey real or not real? What do you think?
I think Bailey's not real. Joe?
She looks. It's crazy. I don't like her new look. I'm going to say real because she looks so specifically bizarre.
Okay.
Oh, interesting.
I think she's real. Yeah, I think she's real for sure. And, well, I don't know what she's doing or why she's there, and that's part of the show. We'll figure that out. And before we get to predictions, I also want to mention that, you know, we buried the lead. We're actually live streaming here. We're doing live for the first time. We're actually live streaming. It's our first Bates Motel live stream. And, you know,
we've got... Is it because we're in the studio?
Yeah. This is the only studio that allows us to live stream. So we're doing a live stream. So hello, people out there live. People are commenting on, you know, right now, Santa Olson, Hadapurpura. You know, or having a wonderful conversation. Put in my heart. And JP Girl 87. I can't read. And you're welcome for that. And yeah, Norma did try to kiss Norma almost, right? Mother Norma. Wait.
Mother Norma probably tried to kiss. Okay, I have one trivia question real quick. Trivia question.
Okay, then back to the predictions. Go ahead.
Back to the pilot episode, and anybody can answer on the live stream. Anybody can answer, and maybe you can. Back from the pilot episode, what was the outfit that Norma was wearing when Norma brings Norman up to the hotel for the first time and shows him the Bates Motel?
The blue and white dress.
Yep.
Bada bing. Easy.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I didn't know. That to me would have been a difficult question, but she was wearing the dress. And like, that was like, it was interesting because it's like, that's when Norman sees, it was like the happiest and like, it's full of possibilities.
I also think that like, that is the first thing we see Norma in, and that will be the last thing we see Norma in. I have that prediction. Ooh. That's a bonus prediction for me. Joe, what's the prediction? Go ahead.
Oh man, I got nothing.
Joe Filippo. Joseph Salvatore San Filippo.
Joseph Salvatore San Filippo. What's wrong with you, eh?
You can't tell me what the
pit is. The prediction.
You can't tell me what the pit is. You can't give them a prediction. What's going on? You predict Vera Farmiga
right,
will be the good actress.
I Joe, right, no I'm going to give you some time. You. I'm going to have, this isn't going to be as big as my drop the mic prediction that wasn't true, but this is actually an end of series prediction.
Okay, go.
My end of series prediction is that, so the only person on the show that has a predetermined shelf life is Emma, right? Mm-hmm. I actually think that Emma will be the only person, aside from Norman, to survive all of this.
Ooh, that's a good idea.
I'm pulling it up now. There's a wonderful prediction on YouTube, and I'll get it right. I'm sorry for the person who made this prediction. But it was that basically in the movie Psycho, mm-hmm. you know, at the end of Psycho, she talks about the fact that Norma was buried in up at the cemetery, mm-hmm. and then they said, well, Norma's up at the house. And then the sheriff says, well, then who's buried at the cemetery if Norma's at the house? Uh-huh. And so this prediction was saying that person who's actually buried in the cemetery will be Emma because Norma is at the house. I don't remember how she laid it out, but it's on our YouTube feed. But I thought, I read it, I'm like, yeah, I want to say that on the show. And then I'm like, what happened?
I can't agree with it because directly is opposite from my prediction that Emma will be the only one that survives.
I love the idea of
it. But I do. Well, I do think because, I mean, I think it's just misdirection where they have you thinking, okay, she's going to die. She's going to die at such a young age. But this situation is so messed up.
No one's getting out of this thing alive. And the only person I think is getting out of this thing alive is maybe Romero, because he kind of reminds me of the sheriff in the original Psycho. It's that role, kind of the know-all sheriff who, like, has all the information. Maybe that's the Romero character.
Well, he kind of knows when to get out.
Right.
He's a survivor.
So that's it. But anyway, I think that. My prediction is I think Bradley's real. She's going to have some answers, and she may have the I think that she has the key to some of the Bob Harris stuff that we're in the middle of. I think that she's going to somehow she's the key to sort of get them out under this Bob Harris thumb. I don't know how that is or what that is, but we're going to see that. And we'll definitely, I think we'll definitely see Norman go full Norma in voice and in wig and in everything else.
Yeah, and maybe kill Bradley in a shower.
I don't know. That's a lot of predictions in there. But anyway, that's all we got for this week. Thank you so much for joining us, and thank you so much for watching us live stream, the 30 or so people or more who are watching us live right now. We appreciate that. You can check us out on iTunes as well. Rate us. Give us fives.
Comment.
You can comment. There's some lovely comments made about
and predictions
some
as
of
well.
Us on the panel. Maybe me.
Maybe not me.
I don't know. It's okay. So thank you for those. We very, very much appreciate those. And thank you for your comments on YouTube and your participation on YouTube. Joe Filippo, where can the people find you?
The people.
Are you gone? Joe Filippo's gone. So people can find Joe Filippo at
Joseph
Sanfilippo on Twitter and also on his website, Joseph Sanfilippo. Joe Filippo on Twitter at joesanfilippo.com. You can find Dua at.
You can find Dua at Dua Casey on the Twitters. That's DuaKaissi on the Twitters.
What is that voice?
I don't know.
Me, Joe Braswell, at Joe Kate Braswell on Twitter and Instagram on here at AfterBuzz, doing a couple more after shows, Matt and Ed and Blacklist. Thank you so much for joining us. We will see you all next week. Bye bye.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.